Welcome to Career Tours. This week, we're finishing up Career Goodwill. The questions this cast answers are, what is Career Goodwill? What use is Career Goodwill to me? And how can I use Career Goodwill? If you're a licensee, you probably enjoy Mark's Things I Think every Wednesday. In a recent entry, Mark addressed the power of communication, the most formidable gift that humans have been given. A quote from Thomas Jefferson reads, "He who receives an idea from me receives instruction without lessening mine, as he who lights a taper at mine receives light without darkening me." As professionals, we constantly have to be working on our communication skills. It's the single most frequent thing we do at work, every day. As Mark states, an organization without communication isn't an organization. Is your organization in peril of failing communications? If so, Manager Tours can come on site and teach up to 30 of your professionals the art of effective communication. It's not that hard. To learn more, contact Maggie at maggie@manager-tools.com or check it out by going to manager-tools.com and looking for training for organizations in the menu. Last week, we started talking about Goodwill. We talked about what it was, and we talked about the first thing to do to get more, which is get results, like actually succeed in your job. And now we're going to go on to the other important part of careers. So careers are based on results and relationships. And now we're going to talk about relationships.
Yes. Our next piece of advice is that you should be actively working on your relationships. What about our relationships? When you're getting things done, when you're really focused on results, you have to keep in mind you shouldn't do that at the expense of others.
As you and I have said before, you can, you just won't last long.
Right. It's not going to help with the goodwill equation. So don't throw people under the bus just to make your results better. Goodwill literally exists in the minds of others. And therefore, destroying your relationship with them makes no sense. It doesn't serve you any purpose.
No, right?
Those of us, by the way, who tend to have the worst relationships are high D's and high C's. So if you're familiar with DISC, high D's and high C's, we're so focused on task A, task B, task C, and we don't think about the interactions that we're having with people. That's why we said actively, right? That's why you need to actively work on your relationships instead of doing what you've always done, which is focus on the tasks. In fact, in case you guys think that we're talking about others, we're not. My DISC profile actually says my unwavering self-focus is really good to help get stuff done. And it makes people not like me very much. That's a paraphrase of what it says. It's just that focus on tasks, you know, I mean, you want me to work for you because it's going to get done. No question. And that focus can make it hard for others to believe that you care about them or that you even think about people as anything other than a means to an end.
You are just cogs in my machine. I sent someone a text this morning and was like, hey, should we do this? And then afterwards, I was like, oh, good morning. How are you? Hope you're having a good day.
Yeah.
Because it's not the first thing that comes to my mind, but it's important.
It is. You know, what's so funny is I talk about this in my conferences a lot. Sarah actually once said to me out loud, leave your feelings at home under the bed where they belong. She said that about work to me in front of a conference group. And I said, Sarah, they can hear you.
Yeah, you just used your outside voice.
Yeah, they can actually hear you saying that. They're going to think that we're not friends. Like, they're going to think that you're mean to me or something. In fact, Sarah's lovely and still believes that sometimes you should leave your feelings at home, which is fine. So we're going to make some suggestions about what to do, opportunities in order to increase your goodwill and actively work on your relationships. And the first opportunity we suggest you focus on is the opportunity for communication.
This is my favorite because whenever you look at results from companies like engagement surveys or employee surveys, I have never, ever, ever seen one that says, we have plenty of communication.
Yeah.
I feel entirely satisfied with the amount of communication there is in this company. Never. Everybody gets 2 out of 10 for communication every time. You would imagine that no communication was happening on the entire planet. which is not true. So communication is the first one because it's the one thing that we know everybody wants more of all the time.
There's never enough, right? You could communicate 5 times as much and people would still report at the end of the year, we have too little communication.
I'm not a big communicator. So when people say I don't communicate enough, I know that's true and I need to work on it. But it must be really frustrating if you're like someone who communicates a lot and is still told it's not enough.
The good news is it's never going to be enough, guys. So it's not that you're not hitting the mark. It's that no one's hitting the mark. So there's that. If you don't do this naturally, and most of us don't, you should look for opportunities to give information or just to say things like, good morning, how was your weekend? Hi, you know.
Try and remember when people have been on vacation, say, how was your vacation? If they tell you something about their child, try and remember to say, how was the play? Or is he feeling better? Or whatever. I write it down because I am so unlikely for it to come to my mind. I do care about those people. And we should make that clear. High D's and C's care about the people in their life. They care about their team. They do. It's just that when they're thinking about work, they don't think about it in terms of the people. They think about it in terms of the tasks. So if you, like me, have to write it down, it's fine.
Yeah, just remind yourself.
Yeah, it's just the same as, you know, I've got a bad memory, so I write things down. Or I find it difficult to get up in the morning, so I put the alarm clock on the other side of the room. There's nothing wrong with doing those kind of things for relationships, if relationships is the thing that you find difficult. And if you find it hard, still find it hard, there's over 150 podcasts about communication on our website. So whatever communication problem you're having, there's a podcast for it.
So we're going to communicate more. We're going to work on it. We're also going to do favors for others. This is actually a really good one. Trading favors is a really good way to build up your goodwill store, like your little bank of goodwill with other people. Every time you do a favor for someone else, they feel a little warmer towards you. They feel, you know, a little bit better about your relationship. So next time you want something, they'll be more inclined to help you if you've done them a favor. And of course, that makes sense. It's a trade. Mm-hmm. If you've done a favor for them, they're more likely to feel comfortable doing a favor to you. And for those of you who are thinking this, it's not underhanded. It's not Machiavellian. It's not scheming or deceitful. It's not unscrupulous. It's not manipulative. It's not, you know, actually manipulating people by thinking, oh, I'm going to do these favors for them and keeping a secret list. That's a little too much, guys. What we're talking about is favors such as covering someone's lunch, covering, you know, for them during lunch, posting a document for them, picking up their printing when you get yours, offering to help when they're having a formatting issue or their spreadsheet is off. Instead of saying, hey, your spreadsheet is incorrectly formatted, maybe just fix it for them.
Yes.
And then send it back. Maybe you could help brainstorm if they're looking for a solution to a problem. Wendy actually did me a massive favor last week.
I was going to say that because, like, it's so memorable for me. I'm joking. But you were traveling, right?
I was traveling and I was in New Jersey and it was 22 degrees. It was 8 p.m. and I was still setting up by myself, and I'd been on the road for some obscene amount of weeks in a row, and I was exhausted. And I was supposed to fly to Newark, but it was windy, so I flew to Philly and then took a car. So I had a 3-hour delay on the front end of my flight and a 2-hour delay on the aft end, and I did all of my meetings in a car from Philly to Newark. So Wendy offered to post my newsletter stuff for me, my weekly send. And even just not having to think about that and knowing that it's the one Monday thing that has to get done that I couldn't get done before that because I didn't have the right access, right? I didn't have enough internet. Knowing that, like, my most important task was done by someone who knew how to do it, it actually meant that I got to eat dinner. That's what it meant, which is wonderful.
It's a pretty big favor. I mean, not that it took me very long, but the difference between eating dinner and not eating dinner on a day before you've you're going to present when you've been traveling forever is a big deal. And it took me less than 10 minutes
because
I knew how to do it.
And it was wonderful to not have to do it. These are the kind of traits, right? Like a couple of weeks ago, Mark had a power issue and we recorded like on really short notice, right? You said, mm-hmm. can you record? And we recorded like an hour later or something, right? So you trade.
Right.
You help out.
We're not talking about, you know, buying votes in an election or, you know, bribing people or anything like that. We're just talking about the day-to-day small things, just thinking a little bit more about your colleague and doing something helpful if you can. And we have a podcast called The Favor Economy, which is all about favors and what you can do and other examples. Do you ever wish you could just ask Mark a question? Licensees can. They get a special email address that they can use to ask Mark and the rest of the Manager Tools team anything they like, from how to apply a technique to advice on what to do next. What's more, Mark and I send emails out every week with even more information about management, professionalism, and life at work. To find out more, go to manager-tools.com and type #license in the search bar. So next up is cooperate with others.
Yeah.
So the example is, if a colleague wants to have a meeting at a particular time and it doesn't much matter to you, let them have the time they want it. If somebody prefers a Word document with a table in it over a spreadsheet and you know that and it really doesn't matter all that much, then do a Word document.
Yeah.
You know, it's not built on big things. It's not built on large gestures. It's built on the small everyday things. I heard this recently about marriage, that marriage isn't, you know, roses and diamonds on Valentine's Day. It's making coffee every morning for your spouse.
That's so nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the same thing. It's not so, like some big grand gesture or some big, yeah, like buying votes for someone or whatever. It's just like, oh, you're having a rough day. I'll bring your coffee rather than you having to go to the break room.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know how at Christmas people get you stuff and it's not what you want? Mm-hmm. Like not on purpose. Like they genuinely mean well. They're getting you a present, which is always lovely. But maybe it's not something that you really wanted or needed, or like it's just, you're like, oh, thank you. Okay. And then, you know, for example, one of my favorite favors that a friend of mine and I trade is we walk each other's dog. So mm-hmm. at 5 o'clock, if the dogs have to be walked, just walk both dogs. And that way the other person doesn't have to do it. And that sounds so small, but if you've come home from a long day and you were stuck in traffic and you discover you don't have to walk the dog, you can take off your shoes and sit down and read your book. It's wonderful. It's not Christmas presents. It's somebody walked the dog. Good. Okay. The next thing that we consider is make other people's jobs easier, not harder, which is always probably true, but I don't think it's always easy to tell when we're making things harder. And sometimes it's just it's a preference thing, right? Mm-hmm. In some of our recent guidance, that was our cast that we recorded, right? We talked about widening your reporting, which came down to letting people know that work is on its way from you, and asking them earlier rather than later how they'd like that work to arrive. And that's one way to make people's jobs easier. And you just mentioned another one a little bit, you know, choose the format which they'd prefer, give them the information in a way that makes sense to them. Even if it isn't your first choice, it makes people's lives easier. And then you're more likely to have goodwill in your relationships because you're not a person who makes other people's day harder or longer or makes them have to think differently about things.
And you might sum up these activities as acting in the interests of your colleagues, even if it means a bit more work for you whenever you can. If you can just think a little bit more, think for a couple of minutes about, okay, I'm going to do this thing. Is there a way I can make it better for the person who's receiving it? Then do that. So here's an important thing about goodwill that people forget or don't realize. You lose the goodwill when you move jobs.
Yeah.
Like if you move companies, if you change jobs, you lose the goodwill, because goodwill is developed and created and nurtured between individuals. Remember, it's the favors that you've done. It's the times when you've thought about someone else. It's a time when you've helped someone. If those people aren't in your new company, then all the goodwill in the world is gone. It's your relationship with another person that provides the base on which the goodwill is stacked.
The moment you leave the company and start somewhere else, all that goodwill is gone and you have to start over. And we know this inherently. We probably just don't think about it in terms of goodwill. If you had a buddy in accounts at your previous role, and so you could always get an extra report when you needed it, hey, guess what? Now you can't anymore if you don't work there and you've changed jobs. In the new company, there's no buddy. You have to go find the buddies and work on those relationships so that you can use your buddies later. That's like, there's that Machiavellian idea.
Yes.
But you have to start at the bottom. You have to start with nothing. It's like your emotional bank accounts are emptied out. Maybe in your old role, you could be late with your expenses and get away with it. Well, you can't anymore. Not here. If your boss used to let you experiment with things he thought were dubious based on your track record, probably can't do that anymore because you don't have a track record.
Yeah, your track record's gone.
Yeah, you have there's no past data for them to say, okay, yeah, this person can be trusted. And so there's no goodwill from there.
And getting things done in a new company is way harder than most people imagine because they discount the friction-reducing properties of the goodwill that they've built up elsewhere. You know, you think, oh, I can get this project done in 2 days. But then you forget that you're relying on someone to give you data, someone else to help you analyze it, someone else to print the decks. And those three people were all people that you'd done favors for or had goodwill with. And now you don't have that goodwill, all of a sudden that project's going to take you a week. In fact, this is why Mark often tells coaching clients that the extra money that you're paid to make a job or company change is to compensate you for having to rebuild all of your goodwill. In other words, if you get a raise because you've moved jobs, that raise, that the difference is the company paying you for the goodwill that you're losing. It's not that internally there's salary compression. If you stay in a company, the raises that you get are smaller, but that's partly because you have all this goodwill. And when you move, it's goodwill reimbursement because your life is going to be much harder for the next 3 months while you build up goodwill in the new company.
It's really tough because you don't know those people. You don't know who you're going to be able to interact with easily. You don't know who even you're supposed to be interacting with. Even the rhythms of your old job that would lead to those situations with goodwill don't exist in a new role. You're not going to have the same amount of access to the printing department or the accounts department. You're not going to have the same meeting situations where you're in meetings with people, you know, who were higher up than you or parallel to you because of the way the new organization functions and that the difference from that and your previous role, you're going to have to go and find out who to talk to and how to talk to them and what you can do in order to have relationships and who you're going to have those relationships with. Also, you have to keep in mind that part of the perks you got from your goodwill at your old job came from the goodwill that the people you were getting or building goodwill with had with others, right? So at my old job, maybe, you know, I was friends with someone or worked with someone really closely who had other people who were friends with, they were friends with, and they worked with those people closely.
And you could lean on that person.
Yes. And their ability to get stuff done depended sometimes on who they leaned on. And if you are in a new role, you don't know who this person leans on. I mean, look around, right? Find out who it is that has the most goodwill and go make friends with them, because all of the trades that we're talking about here are also a function of the trades that other people have made with the people around them. It's like this spiderweb effect of exponential increases in your goodwill based on your ability to extend that goodwill to people who can extend it to others. And you're losing that when you move jobs.
Yeah. There was some research done, I think, at IBM in the 80s only vaguely remembering it, but basically they did a bunch of research about relationships in the company, and they drew an organization chart that was based on the relationships, and the people who were important on that chart are not necessarily the people who are most important on the actual organization chart.
Sure.
So finding those important people and doing what you can to help them, beginning to trade favors, that's how you get things done in a new company, but you're building it from scratch.
Yeah, you have to start from the bottom.
Yeah. Goodwill is what accounts for an outsized return on investment. So someone who is achieving much more than expected, much more than their role would suggest, probably has a really big amount of goodwill. And the best news is you can have it too. You don't need to be anything. You don't need to change who you are. You just have to behave in the best interests of your colleagues, of your other people, and you'll get the benefit of goodwill too. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more guidance.